You're listening to Lanyap, a weekly digest of news, personal finance, brotherly banter, and whatever else is on our minds. From Stokes Family Office.
This is Greg Stokes. I'm with my brother Doug. This is Lanyap Podcast, March 26, 2024, Tuesday. That's a mixed bag start to the week. Couple of stocks. It's been an amazing last 6 months, as we've talked about repeatedly. One of the best 6 month stretches in history and the longest 6 month run that we've had in like 60 years. Been a really good period of time. Starting to get some froth in the markets in certain particular pockets that there's been froth in the recent past. For example, in cryptocurrencies, meme coins, meaning things that are supposed to sound funny or whatever. Those particular cryptocurrencies are doing really well. Specifically ones that are related to current events, like there's a Joe Biden cryptocurrency or Donald Trump cryptocurrency. But that particular enthusiasm is also popped up in the publicly equity markets, as it has in recent past. Reddit, which is a forum website, had IPO'd a couple of weeks ago, or last week maybe, was up considerably in its in the aftermath of its IPO. News surrounding Donald Trump's Truth Social SPAC launch really reverberated in the markets today, and at one point was up like 50% or something like that. I'm going to read this from an article. This is an article from Wall Street Journal. Shares of Donald Trump's social media company surged 40% on the first day of trading, boosting the presidential candidate's fortune. The question is, how soon can he tap his roughly $5.5 billion stake in Truth Social? That's up to the board of Truth Social's parent company. It goes on to say that Donald Trump's had legal issues in terms of having to post money for bond related to lawsuits in New York, and his fortunes have changed dramatically as a result of this particular SPAC launch. So it's really interesting, these sorts of enthusiasm around market around specific stocks and cryptocurrencies, etc., have really significant monetary ramifications. Donald Trump owns 60% of this particular SPAC, which is a type of a company or a type of investment vehicle that gets launched into the public markets. And it's interesting that that may have a potential implications on like the U.S. presidential elections, because up until not too long ago, Donald Trump was having issues with liquidity and posting bond. And all of a sudden, he's had this huge windfall related to this.
I think that was solved yesterday with the appellate court reducing his bond postage down to like 170 million from close to 500 million. There's also some conspiracies out there related to Susquehanna and its founder, Jeff Yass, bringing Truth Social public. They have a 7% stake in TikTok, and obviously has an interest in the TikTok ban not going through. And Trump has come out publicly to state that he does not support the TikTok ban, but I think that he's simply saying that because Biden supports it. But a lot of political implications going on in markets today, and all of this is coming to a head in 8 months. Can't believe it's already election 2024 season. Be happy when this one is over.
Yeah, and there's other geopolitical events going on. There was a tragic terrorist attack in Russia over the weekend. This morning, I woke up to the news that a really long bridge, I don't know, the Key Bridge in Baltimore, was knocked down by a huge ship, container ship. These container ships are just causing all kinds of problems, I guess, with this Evergrande and Suez Canal blockage a couple of years ago, and now this. So anyway, lots of things going on, and there's ramifications that I read about as it relates to that, because now the port of Baltimore is basically inaccessible because there's a bridge blocking it, and there's going to be recovery, and there's going to be people that perished in that particular tragedy. So there's going to be reverberations around that, because the port of Baltimore is a specialist port for certain types of goods, and they're not going to be able to get off there, obviously, and there's going to be goods that are trapped in that port for a while. So anyway, there's a lot.
Imagine just the and this is, it's a horrible tragedy, and we're hopeful that there are survivors. If the silver lining here is that it happened at 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah, I don't know how you survived that though.
Yeah, I don't think that you do. Just imagine how if that were to Baltimore is a similar city to New Orleans in that it's surrounded by water and accessible really only by via bridge, coming from DC and other Northern Virginia. But how just impactful if like something like that were to happen in New Orleans, it is completely destructive to the local economy. And it's just a horrible, horrible tragedy, not just a human tragedy, but just an economic tragedy for that region for the time being.
Right. And then you're right about the silver lining of that is it happened at 3 or 4 in the morning or whatever, because I read online that something like 800,000 cars go through that every year, that particular bridge. So it could have been really bad. It is really bad. And you're right. It would be completely crippling to New Orleans if we lost the Mississippi River Bridge. And that could conceivably happen here too. And they have specialists that drive boats in New Orleans, and in Baton Rouge and same thing in Baltimore. But if you look at the video of that particular incident, it looks like the ship was having mechanical issues and the lights went off on the ship right before it happened. And so, physics took effect, unfortunately, but yeah, it's going to have a lot of implications. And one of the things I read about on that particular, that particular port is where the Domino sugar refinery is located, and sugar that gets imported into the United States gets refined and distributed from that particular port. And so there's going to be probably knockoff effects related to that on the sugar side of the equation. Anyway, just all
chocolate too. Did you see the price of shifting gears slightly? The price of cacao. This is similar. Remember when orange juice and eggs went through the roof? I think it was last year, the year before last. There's just still supply chain issues that are reverberating from COVID and geopolitical issues, war. That these commodities just spiked to like parabolic levels. Well, now it's cacao. Its price of, I don't even know how they measure cacao, but it basically went from one unit was like $2.50 up to $9,100 in what, a month?
It's nuts.
6 months. This is another one of those commodities that's just having issues related to supply chains that has gone parabolic and similar to orange juice and eggs. We'll see what happens there. So if you have sugar issues, and you have cacao issues, my kids are going to be having some problems when the Easter Bunny comes this weekend. So,
yeah. So in any event, what we talked about at the outset of the podcast is it's been a really strong period in the market. This is from Ryan Dietrich. The S&P 500 is about to be up 5 months in a row. Strong future returns after these streaks are actually quite normal. So it's counterintuitive, but good returns beget good returns.
There's a FOMO effect, right? I mean, it's just the people see the price of things going higher, other people getting wealthier. They get more comfortable. Things are more comfortable. That's, and we've talked about this in the past, that when people say, look, I'm going to wait for things to clear before I invest, that's exactly what we're seeing right now. That momentum of people coming back into the markets leads to higher prices,
right?
At least in the short term.
Yep. And like we've talked about, when people say, I'm going to wait till things clear up before they get in or whatever, that's just translation for I'm going to wait to buy when prices are higher, essentially. And then we hear that all the time because people don't want to buy in uncertain times, but uncertain times usually mean that prices are lower. So people will implicitly are saying, I'll just wait until the market goes up and then I'll get in. And then likewise, if the market goes down, they'll want to get out because they don't want to be invested when there's uncertainty, but there's always uncertainty. And there's falling uncertainty right now. Prices are going up and it is like a self-fulfilling prophecy in these sorts of times because the narrative has changed in that we were a couple of years ago, by virtue of the Fed increasing rates, that was going to cause a recession or some sort of market breakage. We've avoided that particular foregone conclusion or previously thought foregone conclusion up until now. Anything can happen, obviously, and we can still have one of those periods of time where we run into a difficult period of time. But as it stands right now, things are looking really strong, really positive in the markets. If you look at the 5 month wins, this is produced by Ryan Dietrich. 5 month win streaks can mean more strength. If you look at what he did was he produced something like 28 times or whatever, the average 12 month returns over that period of time after a 5 month win streaks in the S&P 500 are 12.5%. There's only two negative periods over that period of time. You're talking about, so really it's, and all else being equal, the data is indicative of more good to come. Obviously this is a relatively small sample. So you're talking about 28 times, anything can happen. But in general, if you look at any sort of prognostication about, well, what happens at any point in time, 1 year out, 3 years out, 5 years out, and any sort of market data, the chances are that things are going to be okay. And he, even to that point, if you look at, this is another Dietrich produced chart. Here's an oldie but goodie. If you bought the S&P 500 the day it moved into a bear market, the future returns are usually strong as well too. So basically, you buy when people are scared, it means really strong returns. In this particular case, the average returns are 15%. And after a bear, S&P 500 moves into a bear market from 1950 to present. But if you likewise buy after a really strong period of time, it's really good as well too, over a long period of time. But obviously
it's good to buy stocks.
It's good to buy stocks if you have a long period of time. Right. Yeah. We were talking about that offline. Like
a friend sent me a case study, from Yale School of Management from May of 2020. And the title of it is On the Nature of Long-Term Holds, and subtitle is Holding a Business for the Long Term is Lucrative. And basically the summary here is that, so long as you buy high quality businesses or own high quality businesses and hold them for the long run, that's how you accumulate wealth. The problem with jumping in and out of positions, whether it's passive equity positions or active ownership in businesses, is there's transaction costs, there's fees, there's taxes, etc. Those are all drags on wealth creation and wealth accumulation. Compound growth over decades, whether it's in a closely held business or in a passive equity portfolio, and not paying attention to volatility, whether you own a business or you own a piece of real estate or where you own an equity portfolio or all of the above, you're going to have volatility whether you see it or not. The key to this is just holding throughout those periods, so long as you have a really high quality business, whether it's active or passive, or if it's a piece of real estate. And so really the article here is, you know, take a look around at all of the wealthiest people you know. This is the professor asking his students in class, where'd you grow up and who are the two or three wealthiest people in your town? And those two or three wealthiest people are typically business owners, real estate owners, et cetera. What do they all have in common? Whether it's their business or the piece of real estate they've owned forever, they're not active flippers. And so, anyway, that can be applied to any aspect of life. If you want to create wealth, if you want to accumulate wealth, the one thing that you need to do, and one of the hardest things to do, is find something of really high quality and just sit on it.
It's so true, and that's why I've heard people say is that real estate is forever wealth, because nobody's showing you the price of your real estate versus in comparison to your stock portfolio or whatever on a daily basis. And it's so difficult to hold on to a stock that gets halved or whatever, which happens all the time. Even the best stocks or highest quality stocks like Berkshire Hathaway have been cut in half several times in their history. So it's very difficult to hold on to something that's cut in half and somebody's showing you that you can sell it at any given point in time with the click of a button. And it's likewise very difficult to hold on to something that's gotten a double on it or triple or 10x even. But the people that have been really successful, and we've seen it in our client base over decades, that have just bought and held over various market cycles, have been able to withstand the volatility on the upside and on the downside and on the upside, because it's a real thing. And by virtue of you avoiding that, the constant turning over portfolio, you avoid the constant tax issues, and also trying to find something that's a suitable replacement investment, which is really, as it relates to real estate deals specifically are syndicated by individuals and groups that are incentivized to flip those. And because that's how they get paid on a performance basis upon the consummation of a sale. But if you can find something that you can hold on to for a long period of time on the real estate side of the equation, or on the stock side of the equation, or in a closely held business, generally speaking, those if they're quality assets, can really bear fruit. And the businesses
and it almost doesn't matter. I mean, it matters, but it doesn't matter what you pay at entry, right? So Charlie Munger is famous for saying this, that the multiple on entry is almost irrelevant within context, almost irrelevant so long as you hold for a long period of time and that company or that piece of real estate has growing earnings over time and has high returns on capital. And so that goes back to the point that Dietrich is making, that whether you bought at the top or the bottom, markets are generally positive over the long run. The same goes for any individual purchase of a high quality asset. Your returns may be slightly better. Obviously, if you buy at a cheaper price, returns are going to be slightly better. But the more important piece is quality and long time horizon. If you figure those two things out, it's pretty hard not to become wealthy.
Right. Well, to your point, like, do you really care if you bought Microsoft or Microsoft's $400 a share or whatever today? Do you care?
Yeah, but in the 90s, you could have bought it at the top of the bubble in the 90s, and you're fine. I mean, you're more than fine today.
Right, exactly. You could say, okay, well, if you would have bought for $100 a share or $80 a share, $120 a share, it's a huge percentage variance but relative to where the stock price is today, it really just is irrelevant where you're buying. It's not irrelevant, but it doesn't really mean a whole lot, and you're better off just buying and holding versus trying to time the bottom or whatever. But to my earlier point, the idea is that if the transformation in that particular business over the last 20 or 30 years has been tremendous, meaning that business model at that point in time was selling subscriptions of Windows, and now they've just been this broadly diversified offering that in terms of not only Windows, but in terms of Microsoft Office, now they're getting into AI, the cloud storage, et cetera. But if you just shut your eyes to it and try not to jump in and out and buy quality, that can be a really good road, a good pathway to success.
Yep. I want to shift gears a bit before we wrap up. There's just two really great pieces from Scott Granis of Calafia Beach Pundit in the last week. The first, you talked about how we were talking and basically all of punditry was talking in 2022 and early 2023 about how rising interest rates was going to put a halt to the economic growth. That economic growth had a risk of going negative into recession. And we had, I think, 100% of respondents that were CEOs of large companies say that they expected a recession in the next 12 months. This was like October of 2022. This is Granis. This is from last week. He says, here's a very short post to highlight the excellent shape of today's financial conditions. At the very least, adds up to one important conclusion. There is no shortage of liquidity, and financial markets are thus free to do what they do best, namely to redistribute risk away from those who don't want it to those who value risk. This is a very important function of free markets, since it reduces the market's overall level of anxiety, thus minimizing the risk of disrupting influences and panic. And this is the Bloomberg Financial Conditions Index, which is, I think, never been higher, which is so counterintuitive, because you would imagine that if you go from a world of zero interest rates into a world of 5% interest rates relatively quickly, that would have major disruption in the economy. Turns out it doesn't. We had times up, and this chart doesn't have it exactly, with around this time last year with the banking crisis with Silicon Valley Bank, Synchrony Bank, what was the other bank in San Francisco?
I mean, I've already forgotten the name. It's yeah. They have the umbrellas.
Anyway, yeah, I know we do have their umbrellas, but yeah. So I think the fact that the Fed had a put on bank liquidity and basically said we're going to backstop everything to calm the market. Ever since then, the market has been very confident in financial conditions and liquidity. And so despite at 5.5% interest rates, we're very much in a accommodative from this, at least this perspective, accommodative situation for financial markets. And then when you look forward down the line and say, okay, rates are coming down, quantitative tightening is coming to an end, and the Fed is saying that if things pop up negatively, we're gonna backstop. That is a recipe for easing financial conditions, and this is just in this chart here. The second piece from Granis, which I think is absolutely amazing. He says, U.S. energy efficiency has soared since 1970. U.S. consumption of crude oil and petroleum products has increased by only 38%. Yet, imagine that. So that's, 50 plus years, we've only increased our consumption of oil and petroleum by 38% total.
That's crazy.
In 50 years. Yet the U.S. economy has expanded by a factor of 4.2 times. As a result, U.S. oil consumption per unit of output has fallen by 2/3. This is simply astounding. Do we really need to continue subsidizing green energy? Well, he gets into a political point, which I would tend to agree with. Do we really need to regulate internal combustion engines out of existence? Regardless of your political stance on this, the fact is that the U.S. output, and why is it? Because oil and petroleum products are expensive. If we don't get more efficient, then it becomes more costly to run your operation. Right. Yeah, it's self-regulation via free markets. And so, 66% decline in consumption per unit of output in the U.S. economy is pretty amazing. So that's just want to point that out there. By the way, AI is going to make that even better. These AI algorithms will be able to run these large manufacturing plants, production plants, facilities to say, here's the optimum time to utilize energy and control inventory and things like that. And so this is just only going to get better.
Yeah, the future is definitely bright. And what I'll do is I'll read this quote that I think would be a great way to close this particular podcast. This is from Packy McCormick. The greatest trick the devil ever played was making you believe that the pessimists are the good guys.
That's it. All right, everybody have, we may be on break next week. We're trying to squeeze a podcast in, but we're both traveling with kids on spring break. And so we're going to be a little bit busy, but we hope everyone has a nice long holiday weekend. And we'll be back either next week or the following. This is Lanyap Podcast with Doug and Greg Stokes. Give us 5 stars. Tell your friends about us.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Lanyap. This podcast is brought to you by Stokes Family Office. If you liked this episode, consider sharing it with a friend. You can subscribe to future episodes in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information about Stokes Family Office and Lanyap, visit us at stokesfamilyoffice.com. The information in this podcast is educational and general in nature and does not take into consideration the listener's personal circumstances. Therefore, it is not intended to be a substitute for specific, individualized financial, legal, or tax advice. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a final decision.